Well, hello, Facebook Live. Welcome to the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. And a big welcome to our live audience, this giant crowd here. It's perfect. It's just like we coached them. It was absolutely perfect. You are watching a live recording of the GeekWire podcast. I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
We are the co-founders of GeekWire, the technology news site based here in Seattle. We've got a great show on tap for you today. John and I are going to be recapping some of the highlights from the week's news, followed by a great discussion with Amy Nelson of The Riveter and Sarah Studer of Impact Hub Seattle about the future of workplaces. Now, applaud for them. Let's hear it. Yeah, so John, it's great to be here in Seattle, or it's great to be here in Ballard, not just Seattle. And, you know, in some ways, the GeekWire podcast originated in, well, is Sunset Hill technically Ballard?
Yeah, see, Ballard? Now we're going to get in these borders of what is Ballard or not.
So. Yes, yeah. But so in some ways, about almost 10 years ago, the first show we did was in the basement of my rental house. And it's amazing to see, really, the way this neighborhood has transformed. And it's been driven so much by the tech industry. And actually, one of the pieces of news that we wanted to talk about this week on the Week in Geek podcast actually relates directly to that. And we'll get into that in a second. I'd be curious just to get your observations, though, John. How has the neighborhood changed from your perspective? And tell us the story of when you first lived here.
Well, I first moved to Ballard in 95. And when I moved here from the Capitol Hill neighborhood, the reaction was, you're moving way out there? Like, it was this place. It was like Shoreline or Everett or something. It was this backwater that people didn't even think you would ever want to walk around. So now it's amazing with all the thriving activity in this neighborhood. I've really seen it change dramatically in those 20-plus years.
It was practically like moving to Vancouver back then.
It was on the outskirts. Not much going on.
Yeah.
But Hattie's Hat was still here and still a loyal patron.
Yeah, absolutely. Although the Viking.
Ah, my lovely Viking. Yeah. Yes, a lot of places have disappeared. But we'll talk more about that change of what's happening in Seattle and what it means for our community here in a little bit.
One thing that I've really noticed around the neighborhood just over the past few months is you would see the for sale signs go up at the houses or at the townhomes, and they would be gone within a week. And something that's changed just in the last 3 months that I theorize, my hypothesis is connected to the tech industry right now, is that the real estate market actually here has started to cool off. And in fact, that's our first news story of the week. There was a report this week from Zillow that the appreciation, the increase in Seattle home prices has actually started to increase at a slower rate. So this is a good thing, right? Yeah. Well, it depends on who you are. We really are starting to see the real estate market cool off just a little bit. There are homes that are staying on the market that would have been snapped up. The cash buyers are not quite there. And I have a theory.
Let's hear it.
I have a theory. About 2 months ago on Amazon's quarterly conference call, Brian Olsavsky, the Amazon chief financial officer, the team at GeekWire actually asked him, because we pay a lot of attention to the Amazon employment as a driver of the economy, what the situation was with hiring locally. And he made a key point that they're filling positions now more internally. They're transferring people around. And we actually saw Amazon's employment dip on a quarter-over-quarter basis for the first time a couple quarters ago. My theory is that is potentially impacting it. Now, the scientists in the audience are going to kill me on this because, as you know, John, correlation is not causation. I would love to see a study because I think it's very coincidental. Am I full of crap? Tell me yes or no.
I mean, it would have an impact, certainly, I think, if Amazon started to slow its growth, which has been absolutely insane over the last 5 years. So I think the theory could hold some water. And I think in addition to the potential of Amazon slowing, one of the things I've noticed and what has changed Seattle in the last 5-plus years and a trend we've really covered closely at GeekWire is the arrival of the Silicon Valley tech giants. So you've seen Google and Facebook and Twitter and Dropbox and eBay and Salesforce and the list goes on, establish very large engineering centers in the Seattle area. And at some point, we pretty much have every one of them now. Every major technology company has a fairly significant presence here. And so we've also potentially tapped out the number of those companies that are setting up operations here. And so I think generally there could be a bit of a cooling. And frankly, you can only grow so quickly, so much, before things start to catch up to what's going on in the community and the city. And I think we hit that point, and we hit it pretty hard here in Seattle. And I think things just naturally are going to slow down. And I would say, as big of a boom as you've had, you're going to have as big of a bust on the flip side. Any economic trends you've looked at usually show that. And so when that is coming, I don't know, but it is going to come.
A few pieces of news this past week tied into all of this. It was funny. Nat Levy, one of our reporters on the GeekWire team, was writing about WeWork, the co-working space, and it ties right into the discussion we're going to be having in just a minute with Amy and Sarah. The expansion of WeWork, they're essentially doubling their footprint here and really doubling down on Seattle, and it's in part because of their bullishness on the economy. And I had to say to Nat when I was editing his story, this story reads to me a little bit like something that somebody would have written in about, I don't know, July of 1999. You know, it had that kind of dot-com bubble optimism to it. And so I told him to go find some skeptics to put in the story.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things we've also been hearing, just covering the startup community and talking to people in that arena, is that there does seem to be a realization now that we might be starting to come to a close of this real boom time chapter. You've started to see a lot of stories about that. But just even anecdotally, some of the folks that I've been talking to have started to wonder if things are going to start to slow down in the tech economy, which has really fueled the boom, not just in Seattle, but nationally over the last several years.
And yet another piece of news this past week, I know we're very real estate heavy here, but it actually is appropriate given the neighborhood that we're in. Amazon announced that they're, or acknowledged that they're going to be taking over the entire Expedia headquarters in Bellevue after Expedia moves to the Seattle waterfront.
And I found this to be a pretty interesting story.
It's extremely interesting because if you put that in the context of the head tax debate, and then
that's not why I was thinking
okay,
about it.
But if you think about what happened during the head tax with Amazon and the whole discussion about throttling their growth in Seattle, they're clearly not throttling it in Bellevue, the community on the other side of the lake.
Well, my Machiavellian view of this with how Amazon operates is that they see a tremendous opportunity to mine talent out of Expedia, of those people that don't want to make the commute to the west side of Seattle.
Yeah.
And they're seeing this as a great opportunity to go and mine tons of talent. I think, you know, it ties into Amazon's HQ2 plans, too. One of my theories with Amazon and where they might expand into later this year with that secondary headquarters announcement is in a location where there is a bruised and battered technology company that's been around for 20-plus years that they can just go in and decimate their workforce and hire everybody. Yeah. So you think of a place like Toronto, RIM, you know, maker of BlackBerry. Could they go in there and take tons of staffers? Or, you know, Texas, you know, with Dell. So those are places to keep your eye out on.
Yeah, certainly not a warm and fuzzy company when it comes to recruiting, that's for sure.
or many things, frankly.
Yes, yes. All right, well, we are live at the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank here in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. Among the audience here, how many folks have noticed a cooling of the economy, and or how many folks think? Let's ask that question first. How many have noticed a cooling of the economy? By applause, so they can hear it on the.
By applause, cooling.
Cooling.
Slight.
How many think that is just off, and maybe it was just the smoke?
Okay.
All right. There you go. Well, again, a big thanks to Columbia Bank for hosting us here this week. This is the first of several live podcast recordings that we're going to be having here in this space. The next one is September 12th. And we should also mention that the GeekWire Summit is coming up October 1st through 3rd. And you can get tickets for that at geekwire.com/summit. The highlights of that lineup include...
Oh, a number of top technology executives, everyone from the CEOs of Ring to the Gates Foundation to Boeing to Redfin to Impinj. We got a great lineup of folks, so come on out.
Even Nintendo. The president of Nintendo of America is joining us. All right, we will be right back after a break. You're listening to The Week in Geek. Welcome back to The Week in Geek on GeekWire. I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
We are live at the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank here in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. And in this segment, we are going to be talking about the future of workplaces and the startup community and the way that we get work done. Joining us as guests are Sarah Studer, the Managing Director of Impact Hub Seattle, a co-working space and really the nerve center of the community there in Seattle's Pioneer Square neighborhood.
Thank you.
It's great to have you there.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here, Sarah.
Glad to be here. Nerve center. I love it.
Also, we're joined by Amy Nelson. She is the CEO and founder of The Riveter, a female-focused co-working space with multiple locations and almost more locations here, we're going to talk about that, across Seattle and Southern California. She's an NYU law grad, former lawyer, and has worked in a variety of positions. We were marveling today at the fact that you started The Riveter. It was only about a year and a half ago that you launched.
Not even. So 16 months.
Wow, that's fascinating.
We're actually, we are growing faster than WeWork did in their first 2 years, which is exciting.
Yep, we've talked about WeWork in the news segment and their growth, but obviously you've seen it too. Yeah. So give us your...
It's hard to miss.
Yeah, absolutely. give us your elevator pitches for folks who might want to do co-working at your respective places. Tell us about what it's like inside your facilities for people who might not have been inside before.
Well, it's really hard to describe what it's like, so you should all come down and experience it for yourself. Impact Hub Seattle is the social impact co-working space in the heart of Pioneer Square. We've been around for almost 6 years. We did have a proto space that maybe some folks visited about 6 to 7 years ago. But since then, in our current space, we are now operating 40,000 square feet, which puts us on par with the size of a WeWork. However, we are much scrappier. We're really focused on, organizations and companies that want to make positive social change in the world. And that is our niche. And that's what we are also supporting through our global network. There's actually 100 impact hubs around the world, most major cities. So you're actually able to connect here locally and then globally with about 15,000 other social entrepreneurs, impact investors, and a really incredible ecosystem of community builders. So that's Impact Hub Seattle.
That's amazing. And I have to say, I love Impact Hub. I'm there at least once a month, and it's amazing. So The Riveter is co-working and community spaces built by women for everyone. We launched in May of 2017 in Capitol Hill with an 11,000 square foot space, and we are about to open our fifth space on September 1st in Bellevue. We'll have over 75,000 square feet of co-working between Seattle, Bellevue, and Los Angeles. So built by women, welcoming of all. The co-working industry, as we know, is largely being built by men. Industrious, WeWork, Knotel, Rocketspace, Convene, they're all founded by men, and none of them have a single woman on their corporate board or as a founder. And so we looked at that and we thought, really, if the future of work is being built by men, where does that leave women? It looks a lot like the past. So The Riveter embraces all genders, everyone, but we look at women first. We think about women who are building businesses, women who are working remotely. We build programming for them, everything from VC office hours to social media 101, and bring in thought leaders from next month. We have Senator Tammy Duckworth, Jane Fonda, and Howard Schultz.
Awesome. It's interesting. We were looking back at our coverage on GeekWire of The Riveter's launch, and somebody commented. They said, well, wait, yeah, there's really nothing like this in terms of focused on female workers and the needs of women. And then somebody else said, no, Impact Hub. So it really, you do have some commonalities there.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I mean, we're both mission-driven organizations and companies, right? So we all are, I mean, we are both supporting people that want to make a positive difference in the world. And so we're really committed to that. And I think one of the things that, co-working 5 years ago wasn't something that everybody knew about. It's still relatively new to some people. We still have a lot of explaining to do about what co-working actually is. But then when you get down to kind of what do you do when you get there, well, that's a whole different story. What are the possibilities? They're really endless. So I think there's still a little bit of education that we're doing about what co-working and what community means. But at the same time, it's evolving. There are now WeWorks in most neighborhoods across Seattle and across the world. So for Impact Hub, we're really thinking about, it's no longer about where you can go get good work done. I mean, that you can do anywhere. You can do it right here at the Neighbor Hub, which hubs are everywhere. But, you know, what do we bring to it that's different? And I think for Impact Hub Seattle, we're really focused on those connections in that community and what collaboration can bring to make the world a better place. And I think the Riveter has a similar mission, but with a little bit of a different focus. But either way, you know, it's still a new and very quickly growing competitive environment and atmosphere, and we're just still trying to navigate what that looks like.
It is, I mean, and the thing is, we think co-working has really exploded across the country and across the world. But right now in America, co-working represents only 3% of commercial leases. And there is an estimated 30% of office space that will be co-working in the next 10 years. So there is so much room for this to grow.
Wow. Okay. That's really interesting. And it seems like that is, in many ways, the future. And it changes the way people put together companies.
Yeah. I want to ask about kind of the trends you're seeing within your membership base, because I think you guys have kind of the pulse on what's going on at a very early stage of startups. So in talking to your members, are there any potential trends that you're seeing as it relates to entrepreneurship or startups?
What one thing that I've seen that I think was really interesting is we talked about how many of the tech giants have come to Seattle, Facebook, Oculus, you know, they're all here now. And many of those companies are going to co-working spaces as they expand across the country.
Yeah, as they get started, they usually go to a co-working space and then grow out of that.
They do. Yeah. And so I think that's an enormous trend that we'll see in the future of work, is that companies will become more dispersed. Remote work is becoming more and more accepted, part of our culture. And as companies will kind of spread from having this headquarters where everyone is to more dispersed areas, co-working spaces will serve as hubs and sometimes permanent hubs for those offshoots of big corporations. We're definitely seeing that at the Riveter. We have a lot of remote workers. We also have a lot of entrepreneurs, but we have a lot of people who are working remotely for a company that's not based in Seattle.
We see a little bit different, I think, of clientele and mission base, because we're really attracting people that are trying to find their true purpose, right? Like you have your 9-to-5 job, but it might not be fulfilling in terms of how you want to present and show up and contribute to this world, which I think I am assuming that most of us can agree that it feels very, I don't know, unsettled, right?
Messed
we're not
up.
Messed up. Yeah,
yeah,
let's just go
up.
For messed up.
Yeah.
And so what we're really seeing is people that are seeking that purpose and trying to find where they can make the most meaningful contribution, whether that's in a nonprofit or a for-profit. Are they willing to take a pay cut just so they can feel better about the work that they're doing? And we're able to help make those connections. We're also seeing a lot of people who are brand new to Seattle. I have to say, I keep meeting people who have been here for like a minute. They're like, oh, I moved here 2 days ago. Here I am at Impact Hub. What can we do together? And it's like, oh my gosh, like, the first thing that I would do if I was moving somewhere new would be to join a community co-working space, because that's exactly where you can start to get to know as many people as, you know, humanly possible in a really short amount of time. So I think there's something really powerful about that as well, and a role that co-working can play.
So are there specific areas that you see maybe within Impact Hub where people are being more entrepreneurial now from when you started?
That's a great question.
Yeah, sectors or areas of that.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of civic engagement work, and a lot of people trying to tackle the most challenging issues that the city is facing. I'm going to use homelessness as the example that Pioneer Square experiences most visibly, but it's everywhere in the city. It's not just a Pioneer Square problem. So we're seeing a lot of people showing up at Impact Hub saying, this is a problem. I see it in my own neighborhood. How can I help to solve it? What are the things that I can do? Is it starting a company? Is it just talking and learning about the landscape? So there's a lot of motivation to start getting our hands dirty and trying to solve some of the issues. And that's really what Impact Hub wants to focus on. Let's be solutions oriented. Let's be collaborative. Let's use all of our best thinking, you know, and put everybody into a room and start making change.
Something we've been seeing that's really interesting and I think is really exciting is a lot of startups that are focused on women and taking women seriously and making women's lives better. Women control 85% of consumer spending in America, and we are often ignored. And oftentimes, too, men build the things for us. Men build beauty brands. So it's really fun to see startups who are focused on problems that women have and making lives of women easier, more seamless, and better. We have a startup in our space called Armoire that's a curated monthly closet that allows you to rent clothes and return them and not dry clean, which like seamlessly makes life better as a working woman when you're dealing with
the clothes. Are amazing. Just follow them on Instagram. It's incredible.
They're incredible. And then we have, you know, we have women working on apps dealing with women's personal finance. We have a life insurance company that's working on life insurance for women because it's different. We live longer, right? There are different concerns there. And I think all of those things are incredibly exciting. It's just exciting to see the world take notice because we are a big force.
I'll just jump on that really quickly. One of the most inspiring startups that we have at Impact Hub is Bridge Care Finance, which I think definitely toes the line right in between Impact Hub and the Riveter and kind of what makes both of us special. And that's really recognizing that daycare is really expensive. And when a woman has to make a decision as to whether she's going to stay at home and raise her kids or continue on with her career, there's a huge potential earnings loss over her lifetime, something like $2 million that making that decision is going to cost her potentially. So what Bridge Care Finance is doing is they're actually creating a loan program so that families can better afford daycare so that women can continue to work at their job, get promoted, get raises, and continue earning for their family while not sacrificing any of that because daycare is just too expensive. So that's one of those companies that I think is just right in between what the Impact Hub and the Riveter offer and with our different communities, but a super impactful company that also caters to women and their needs.
That is Sarah Studer. She is the Managing Director of Impact Hub Seattle. We're also talking with Amy Nelson, the CEO and founder of The Riveter. We are live at Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank here in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. Todd Bishop with John Cook here on The Week in Geek. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with a discussion of, I think, the most controversial issue I could possibly bring up. That'll be coming up right around the corner on GeekWire. Welcome back to GeekWire. We are here live at Neighbor Hub at the Columbia Bank in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
It's great to do these live shows, and thanks to everybody who's listening on the podcast and the radio. We are joined by Sarah Studer, the Managing Director of Impact Hub Seattle, and Amy Nelson, the CEO and founder of The Riveter. Before the break, I teased to the fact that it's probably the most divisive issue in workplaces today that I really want to bring up. What do you say to people who hate working in open office spaces?
I say the science proves that you can do more, that you'll collaborate more, interact more, and you'll get more done.
The science is wrong.
I'm going to say you're doing it wrong. If you can't carve out a space within an open workspace to get stuff done, maybe it's not for everybody. But, it is challenging and it is different, especially if you have somebody that's coming from a really traditional work environment where they've had their own 10-by-10 square foot office. I mean, that's just an inefficient use of space if we're getting right down to it. It's costly and expensive for your company or whoever your employer is to be providing you that much space. I think that WeWork takes that on the complete opposite. They give you 2x2 space if you're a single person office. But there is something to being able to sit next to somebody and turn to them and ask them a question and be able to, collaborate and interact in that way.
Science.
She'll go to science, and I'll just go to the experience.
It's funny. I know everybody has an opinion on this. It is divisive. If you write about that issue on GeekWire or anywhere else, the comments on that are just off the charts. Everybody's got an opinion on that.
Do you think it's separated by age?
I think possibly, yeah, which probably speaks to my reaction as well.
Saying you're old.
Oh, come on, Amy.
One of our team members who was new to co-working, first started, and we sit out in an open space. Our team sits out with everybody, so we're not kind of shut away. We're just there for everyone to come and talk to us all the time. And we have really, frank and open-air dialogue between our team. And this new team member said, I don't understand. Are we really supposed to be talking about our financials just out here in the space? And we were like, oh, yeah, there's no other way to do it. We're going to be transparent. It was really hard for them to adapt into that, but now they completely embrace it. It just took a little bit of time, and you have to learn how to make the space work for you also.
And you can't take up conference room time from your members?
No, you can't do that.
Most precious commodity.
So what do you do in those situations where people at different companies or on your team are discussing issues that, you talk about things in the office that can be internal. Those are meant for internal consumption. What do you do?
I think a lot of the time, people are pretty respectful, right? I don't really want to hear what you're talking about, and I know how to tune that out. I know how to put on my headphones, and I know how to, redirect my attention somewhere else. But a lot of those conversations that we have, we're able to pull in our members when we're stuck on a particularly sticky point and say, hey, from your experience, if you're hearing this from the first time, what would you do about this? What is your perception about it? And we've gotten some of our best ideas just by being able to do that. So we try and be as open and transparent as possible with the team and with the community. And I think that also helps the community feel a little bit more ownership in this space too. They know what we're going through. They're supporting us. There's a lot of Impact Hub members in this audience right now who I think are here partially because we've created that kind of community where we're not going to be able to build this by ourselves. We need them to be able to help us do it and help realize it for everybody.
So, Sarah, as you mentioned earlier, co-working is still a pretty new thing. I think you both have an opportunity to kind of see what's ahead based on your experiences running co-working spaces. So as you look forward over the next 5 or 10 years, what do you see as important trends happening in the future of workspaces and work?
I think that, 10 years ago, the only co-working operator was Regis. And I think 10 years from now, the landscape will look completely different.
I'll also throw in Office Nomads.
And Office Nomads, thank you. But I think that one thing that we'll continue to see in co-working spaces and in corporations is the continued integration of work and life. I don't like the term balance. I think what's happening really is we're integrating the things. At the Riveter, we try to do as many things in our space as we can. So we have the workspace, but we also have real and true community gatherings. And I think that Impact does that and does that very well, too. And then we've started experimenting with retail. What is it like to have retail in our spaces, right? We have all of these amazing brands built by women. Come sell your things here. Or bringing in events, which we both do a lot of, and so bringing in all of these different opportunities so you can do all of the things in one place. And I think we'll continue to see that over the next decade.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I was going to say the part that creeps me out and that I'm not super excited about is to live where I work. I already spend a lot of time there, so
yeah, I don't want to
suspect
that
we're going
into follow-up question. So you beat me to the punch.
Co-living.
Yes.
One of my coworkers describes it as, co-living seems like a hamster cage where, it's one of those tricked out ones that they can kind of go through this tube and eat over here, and then they come down and they're running around on their hamster wheel and they really never leave this box. I don't think that's great. Personally, I work really hard to make sure that our members actually know what's in our community. So what's going on outside of Impact Hub, what's happening in our neighborhood, so that they can get out and they can experience all the awesome stuff that Pioneer Square has to offer. And I just don't see that being attractive for very long, to be able to live upstairs, work downstairs, go to the gym on floor 3, and be able to go to your Amazon Go.
So we're not going to see Impact co-living anytime soon.
Yeah.
But there is a follow-up question to that, because we have seen this with WeWork and WeLive, where they are trying to really integrate that. And that was the question that I was going to ask, and I'd love to just get your additional feedback on that. What does happen in those situations where you do kind of get into an isolated bubble in the community and you can't break out of it? You even see this on larger tech campuses. You could make the argument that Amazon is kind of building its own isolated bubble in a part of our city, and it's transforming. How do you break that down, or do you want to try to break that down? Seems
well,
like you're trying
interesting,
to
interesting because it's
degree.
Kind of the opposite of what co-working was supposed to be about in the first place, right? So if we're just starting with a workspace, you are supposed to be able to get all of your needs taken care of through your workspace. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a different mindset if you want to also be able to, have your laundry done for you, et cetera, et cetera. We see, from our perspective, we just see a lot of fragmentation within the social impacts ecosystem and within the sector. And so we need to break down those silos. So the more that they're being created by these larger entities, the more work and the harder it's going to be for us to make sure that we're all working together to solve some issues.
Yeah,
so
amen.
I'm a little bit, I don't know, I'm on the fence, but I'm just not.
The Riveter has been interesting. The Riveter has been interesting. I think going back to the co-living, co-work thing, I think it's really interesting to provide opportunities for co-living because it's an economical solution for a lot of people, especially people coming out of college. And I tend to think of the way that co-living will work is it might be people working at the larger tech companies that need a cheaper living option, not people working in the co-working spaces too. I personally would also not like to live and work in the same building and never leave.
We already do because we run co-working.
I know, that's true, but don't tell anyone. No, but I also think, at the Riveter, what's been really interesting is what we've seen is different and disparate communities coming together. Because everyone who walks into the Riveter, whether they're a man or a woman or non-binary, and our membership is about 25% male, they believe in some way in the idea of amplifying women's voices or the importance of creating a space that's led by women. And so that's a really sticky, binding thing that we have. And through that, we've seen people who are remote workers, people who are founders, people who are building lifestyle businesses of 1 to 4 really come together because we do all have the same hurdles and problems in certain ways, like how to do public speaking or how to negotiate for an investment or negotiate a raise, all of these questions. And something interesting that we're doing is we're starting to work with corporations to bring their communities into the Riveter and allow those communities to experience what the Riveter is. So we're working with Nordstrom and Starbucks and Pivotal Ventures, and their employees are members. So they're able to come into the community and attend some of the programming that we have and find a different community that they have within their corporation. Because I think it can happen if you look at an Amazon or a larger company where you're just in that culture and you're not talking to anybody else. And I think it's particularly important for women to have those other communities, because if you're not talking to people from other companies or in other industries, you don't know if you are being impacted by the pay gap. You don't know if your company culture is treating women the way that it should. And so I think those things are all critically important, and we're really excited to be working in that space.
Sarah, obviously at Impact Hub, you have a global perspective. And Amy, you have a really interesting growing West Coast perspective. So for both of you, I'd be curious to get your take. Amy, maybe you can start, because you're in L.A. and Seattle, and now you're about to open your fifth location in Bellevue on September 1st.
That's right. Thank you.
What are you seeing in the Seattle tech community in terms of the trends here, the types of companies being started, the overall economy, and how is that comparing to Southern California in particular?
I think in both places, what we're seeing is, you know, the ground is shifting underneath us, particularly for women, because it's just been such an interesting time since around November of 2016.
Shaky ground.
what's really interesting is women are starting businesses at five times the rate of men. I mean, it is just this incredible opportunity where you're seeing women start everything from venture scale companies like the Riveter to these smaller businesses that are really profitable. And so what we're seeing is just a lot of people coming to us to say, I'm ready to start a business. How do I do it? One of our members is here in the audience, Laura Cleese, who has an amazing company called Intentionalist that she started in the past couple of years. And it works really to highlight businesses that have a social impact in your neighborhood so that you can go and spend the dollars where you want to, where you have the same values alignment. And so what we're seeing is just so many women coming and saying, I'm ready to start this. What's the first step? What's the second step? And so what we try to do is offer programming to help people get past those steps. And it's amazing because we've seen women take their first investor check in our space. We've seen startups triple in size. One thing I'm also seeing is people want even more flexibility than they can just get at one co-working space. Something that we do is all of our memberships are market-wide. So if you're a member of Capitol Hill, you can go to our Fremont location or Bellevue. And people really like that because they have meetings on different sides of the city. And so to have access to different spaces is great. And we're seeing the same thing in Los Angeles, where we opened two locations this summer. People are really going between the different locations.
What about from the Impact Hub, the global Impact Hub perspective?
Yeah, so I think two things. One, you know, Impact Hub started in Central Europe, and it's super easy to get from one country to another country in Europe compared to here in Seattle, where really you can go to Vancouver and Portland as major cities, or you can, I guess, go to Bellevue, which we did try. We did have a Bellevue Impact Hub for about 2 years, which we ended up closing down, in large part because we didn't have the resources or the capacity to sustain it. One of the things that's different between Impact Hub and the Riveter is the just simple investment strategy that we use to start our businesses. Ours was really small. It was, we didn't think about expansion in our initial raise. It's something that we were approached about and came to a couple of agreements that made sense at the time, but then eventually just didn't make sense for us to continue anymore. The way that you guys approached it, you had expansion. I remember seeing you at a Women in Business Leadership Summit, where you said, I told one of our first funders that I wanted to start a space for women, and they said, well, why don't you start 100 spaces for women? Why think so small? And I think that was really, I mean, for me, that was a little bit of a light bulb moment of, six, 7 years ago, Impact Hub should have thought bigger. I think we could have, but we also benefit because we are part of this global network. North American Impact Hubs are structured a lot differently than those in Europe in that they're very commercial real estate based, and so that automatically puts us at a little bit of a different type of stake within the global company. It's a kind of an upside down franchise model. It's extremely confusing. Everything's in euro. I can never ever do the conversions or the time changes. It's very confusing. But I think the rate of growth that we see in the North American Impact Hub market is actually slowing compared to what we've seen in other parts of the world, where there's a lot more support through governments and cities to support the innovation ecosystem than we see here in the States. So it's just been a little bit more challenging for us to be able to play on that global level with this completely different structure that we have.
It's fascinating to look, especially at the growth that you've had, just as we said, just starting last year, and then WeWork's growth. And I know that the assertion that you would make is that this is the future, that co-working is really the future. What would you say to a skeptic who would say, you know what, this feels like too many co-working spaces. It feels like we're overbuilding for the demand. I'm sure some of the investors that you would talk to would ask you that.
No, they were all like, that's an amazing idea. We're investing.
Build 100.
No, I mean, I think you say, look, like, you know, 7 years ago, would you have thought, could there be one car share service? And now there are many, and they're all succeeding. I mean, a year ago, you wouldn't have known about scooters, and now there's like four valued at $1 billion, scooter companies. But I think they're, I think it, it
I wouldn't cite that as credible, though. I mean, like, that's like,
or bike share for that.
But it's fact, right? It's happening.
Well, it is, but yeah. I don't know if that's sustainable. But anyway, keep going. I'm
another
sorry.
Podcast yes, discussion. Exactly. And I have my thoughts as well. I might be on your side.
Yes.
But the point is that it's happening. Co-working is happening. There's a reason that investment dollars are going to this, debt dollars are going to this, because we're shifting as a society to a different kind of work paradigm. And I think it will only continue. If millennials have taught me anything, and they have taught me a lot, it's that, you know, the world demands more flexibility, more room to live life as you want to, not within the corporate structure of 9 to 5.
I can get behind that kind of. Overall, co-working seems like a good thing. It's something that we need. I will say, we're in Pioneer Square, Seattle's first neighborhood. It's a historic district. We were the first co-working space 5 years ago, and now there are 5 of them, most of which are the same size as we are. So there's Galvanized, there's Level Office, but they just changed their name, so I don't remember what they're called. There's the Pioneer Collective, and now there's a WeWork, and now there's Impact Hub. For that particular neighborhood, that's actually questionable as to how the neighborhoods around can develop around a lot of people who are kind of always coming and going. We have co-working members that are here, you know, for 3 months before they find their dream job and they go off and do something else. So there's always these people coming and going and aren't really able to dive into and contribute to the neighborhood in a way that a neighborhood like Pioneer Square really wants and needs.
Well, doesn't that speak to the possible benefit of living and working in the same place? I mean, frankly, maybe
am I advocating for co-living now? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. The other thing about Pioneer Square that's really unique is that there were so few residential units until about a year and a half ago. And so that's been a huge growth area in the neighborhood as well. You only had people that were there between 9 and 4 or 9 and 5 or however, whatever hours people are working these days. Right. And so everybody would leave at night. So there wasn't any reason to stay. There weren't any bars and restaurants that you wanted to go to. Now there are. That's been a huge development within the neighborhood. You know, something like 53 businesses in Pioneer Square opened between 2013 and 2014. Like, that was incredible. We as Impact Hub had no idea that was going to come. We just knew that we loved the building. We loved the neighborhood. We saw a lot of potential. But we also knew that, you know, people were going to leave at 5 p.m. at night. So what does that do to the neighborhood? We needed to figure out how to contribute and how to get people out into it. And luckily, a lot of restaurateurs did a lot of the work for us. There's been a huge amount of growth. The Wave, the NOLA, those type of real estate developments where people can now live is super important. And so it's more successful now than it was before.
So you both started with a mission of making sure that you build a inclusive culture and environment. And I know a lot of organizations are trying to embrace that and trying to figure that out. So what is the advice that you would provide to people that are on that path to try to make their organizations more inclusive, both from a cultural standpoint and from the physical space?
I think from a cultural standpoint, the most important thing is pretty simple. I think that corporations and their leaders should ask their workers, particularly those in minority groups, whether that's in gender or race or any other minority group, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? What can we do better? Because people will tell you. It's not rocket science. These are questions that people will answer for you. I know that when I worked in corporate America, if anyone had taken the time to ask what they were doing right for women, I would have told them. And I also would have told them what they were doing wrong. And I think only when you know the problem can you fix it. So I think that's important. And I think from a physical space, it's creating spaces that reflect the population that you have in your team or that you want in your team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's completely right. I have nothing to say that's anything different. But I do think, you know, and I'll just reinforce, you have to ask the questions in order to get the answers, and you have to listen to what the answers are.
So true.
So, like, let's all learn to practice deep and active listening, because there's a lot being said, even if you need to be reading a little bit between the lines. Asking those follow-up questions are going to get you what you need. And if your employees, you know, in your downtown corridor are saying, you know what, I really just need to be out of this space, I need to be somewhere somewhere that's creative and inspirational, and it would be so great if there was somewhere that I could do that. Figure out how to partner up with a co-working space.
Like Impact Hub or The Riveter.
Exactly. So that you offer that as an employee benefit. That's super low cost. People might not even use it, but just to be able to have that, I think, is a really important way for an employer to make sure that their employees feel like they're heard. So there's a lot of opportunity. And I think, I don't know, I've never worked in corporate America, so I come at this from working at Impact, not living, just working.
You really want to do co-living, don't you?
We Live can just like hook me up with like maybe like a 3-month residency and I'll try it out and blog about it for them or something. But, you know, I do think it's super important that they're asking the questions and that they're feeling heard.
Sarah Studer is Managing Director of Impact Hub Seattle. You can find out more about them at impacthubseattle.com. Amy Nelson is CEO and founder of The Riveter, and you can find out more about them at
www.theriveter.co. Also, follow us at The Riveter Co on Instagram and follow Impact Hub.
At Impact Hub C, and we're www.impacthubseattle.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you both for being here. This has been great.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
A big thanks to the audience here at the Neighbor Hub in Ballard, and thank you for listening to the GeekWire podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app. You can see more from us at geekwire.com. The GeekWire podcast is produced by Claire McGrain. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thanks for listening to GeekWire.